Welcome back, friendly friends. This is the Mini PC Show, episode number 14. Big talk, little machines. Today it's Doran and I. I'm Eric Ardini from Silicon Wrench. No, it's DiniMedia.com now, I'm sorry. And Dor, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm happy you do the intro, because I think I would more than once accidentally say little talk, big machines, which of course would make no damn sense for this show.
That would, we would have to totally change our MO if it was that.
Yeah, there'd be macro computers with vacuum tubes in them and stuff.
Yeah, and then actually that might work, because we probably wouldn't have a lot to talk about.
We would be talking about the old times and how today's computers suck and how they were so much better back then. They were so much more simple. You had to, you know, anybody could fix them, you know, kind of mentality.
Yeah, I was just listening to the Geek Rant podcast today when I was on my way back from Chicago, and they were talking about the first portable computer. And I can't remember what it was called, but I remember when a gentleman brought that to my house. It had like a 5-inch monochrome, like green and black screen, and it had the keyboard like locked into the front of the suitcase, and then it came out and had the curly Q wire attached to it. Oh man, I wanted my dad to buy that off that guy so bad.
Yeah, that's the first portable computer I saw at work. I was asked to empty out a room because it was old, computers need to be junked. And one of the ones I pulled out was literally like a huge Samsonite suitcase size. And I couldn't believe how heavy it was. It had to be every bit of 80 pounds. And I was like, what in the hell is this? And the whole top part came off. That was the keyboard with the curly Q cord. And the screen on it was literally like 3 or 5 inch something.
Yeah.
So 80%, at least, easy 80% of that 80-pound huge Samsonite-sized suitcase was the computer. And only the little top part was the keyboard, and the little part was the screen. I'm like, I cannot imagine getting anything done on that computer. I'll just say that.
This guy came over, he had his whole baseball card inventory saved on that computer somehow, and he was buying baseball cards from my dad. And I was just, because I had a Texas Instruments 99-4A at the time, you know. But this guy had dual floppy drives on it. I'm rocking the cassette deck still, you know.
I don't know. I think it would have been easier to just carry around his whole baseball card collection.
Could be. But that was small. That was a small computer for its day, you know.
It was a mini PC. Mini. Absolutely. Do you want to go through the couple emails that we got there, sir?
Sure. All right, our first email, we'll go to this one here. This was from, this is from Kevin. Kevin Wisher says, he was our winner, right? What device did he win we gave away?
He won the Z-Sun micro USB SD card wireless adapter device, which you could hack and turn into a router. It was advertised as the $10 wireless router.
And that's the thing that's the size of a USB Wi-Fi teeny dongle, basically, right?
Right. Teeny tiny.
Yeah. Okay, so he says, after giving this device a try, I see no need for it. I read about the hack to make it a router, but the instructions look way too difficult for little gain. I'd like to donate the device back to Podnuts so that somebody else may find more benefit with it. Please include it in a future prize drawing and send me the winner's address, and I'll ship it to him or her. I bet you... Nothing personal, Dor, but I bet you whoever wins it this time around will get it sooner than he did.
Oh, I bet you a lot quicker. Yeah, that's not hard. One of the guys we're going to see up in Lenox Fest Northwest has now been waiting for maybe 7 weeks for a mug to be shipped to his house.
You guys going to take it with you then?
No, I'm afraid to take it on the plane.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just... I gotta mail it. Just gotta mail it.
Dor, I'm sorry. We are a perfect couple here, because I've got the same thing, man. I just cannot. I did a lot of eBaying back in the day, and I think I got burnt up on it so much that I'm horrible at shipping things out to people if it's not going to negatively affect my seller rating in some way, you know, or something.
Right. Well, with me, I am slight digression. I'm a government employee. I despise going into those places and seeing anything less than professionalism. It just drives me literally crazy, especially when I walk up to the door is locked, and I find out it's closed between noon and 3 for lunch.
Your post office is?
Yes. Noon to 3 for lunch? What the hell kind of lunch are you? And I come to find out they do that every day.
Wow. Now, I got to say, our local post office rocks. These guys are the professionals you would expect, or you would want to hopefully see when you get there. I've never had a bad experience at our post office. They go out of their way to hook you up if you don't know what you're doing. Like, normally, I don't know what I'm doing when I walk in there because it's, I mean, I don't buy stamps ever. I take that back. I buy stamps for one reason, and that's for Menards rebates. But so when I go in there, I'm really clumsy. I mean, I'm like, I don't know if this box, should I go to UPS with this? Do you guys actually do this? I'm like, oh, do I need to take a piece of paper and then write the address on that? Or can I write it right on the box? I just don't know what I'm doing. So they help me out. They take me like a small child by the hand and teach me the ways of the United States Postal Service. I am a little peeved though that I can't mail something, a letter. Not that I personally mail letters, but for a couple volunteer organizations I work for, I volunteer for, I mail lots of letters out for them. And if it goes from my town to another person in my town, that's like a 7-day deal now. It doesn't just
work.
Yeah, it goes all the way to some place called Crystal Lake and then comes back.
It would be faster to just drive it to their house.
It would. Yeah, it would be. And, 50 cents a stamp pretty much.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that's the only bad part, but that's not their fault. I think it's consolidation and efficiency made that happen.
Okay.
So yes, well, are we going to do another drawing today for that then?
Not today, okay. But my logic is next show I'll say send an email with X in it and the first person who does will get it.
Okay. All right, well thanks for putting that back out there. If you're not using the product, we'll definitely love to give it away again.
Yes.
You okay, Dor?
Yeah, I was just thinking there must have been something I can offer Kevin in replacement for it, but I got to look around and figure something out.
Yeah, Kevin may go gray waiting for your next postage from the way it sounded like the last one went.
Well,
okay, so we've got another email here. This one's from Ira, and Ira says, enjoying the show, even the rambling. Well, so far this show, I think, has been nothing but rambling. Enjoying the show, even the rambling. We'll look for you this year at LFNW. I try to go every year. And that's Linux Fest Northwest is LFNW. And I am so psyched, dude. I'm going to be joining everybody out there this year. I can't wait to meet everybody and see the people I've met before again. I am a little concerned about my flight, though, because I started reading reviews about my airline that I've chosen.
It'll be over soon enough.
I'm not worried about it being a bad flight. I'm just worried about you guys not wanting, I'm worried about like luggage being lost now and delays. It sounds like I'm flying Spirit. I think it was last week or the week before, Dora had mentioned it was on the side. And, like, I did a real quick Google search for flights. And so anyway, my round trip from Chicago to Portland is $120. Figured, oh, that's great. I'll do that. That's even with a bag. So I couldn't pass that up. But now I'm reading all these. Oh, it's a lot of horror stories. But nobody's going to put a good rating about an airline unless they're paid to, right? You're only going to put the horror stories up.
Yeah, and my wife just flew Spirit twice 2 weeks ago going out to Vegas and coming back. Both flights were delayed, but they were literally like 10-minute delayed and 15-minute delayed. It wasn't like it was 6-hour delayed or anything.
Oh, that's not bad. And I don't have any connecting flights. It's nonstop, so that's one less problem to worry about.
Right. Well, the most important thing about your trip, and this is going to be a very important tangent that I encourage everyone listening to pay special attention to. The most important part of your trip is going to be when you land in Portland and you walk out of the plane and you walk out of the tunnel and you walk into the terminal, look down. They have copyrighted or trademarked their carpet, and you can buy clothes with the same pattern that's on the carpet. It's a very special carpet, and everyone says that when they go there and when they're upset or if they get upset, they just look at the carpet and they feel better.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very unique carpet design. It's basically almost map-like of the airport, and it just looks cool. And I know I've seen people with ties and shirts with that same design, but when I tell them what it is, they didn't realize what it was. And I told them, no, that's the Portland Airport carpet design, and they're like, "What the hell's wrong with you?"
they were wearing it, and they didn't realize that's what it was,
and they didn't know. Yeah.
Okay. Man.
And I'm gonna tell you, as soon as you land, that's the first thing that Martin's gonna tell you. He's gonna tell you the story behind all of the carpet. So just act like surprised. And, oh, interesting. Cool. Yeah.
Oh, I got some ties that I can't identify exactly what they are.
Oh, there you go.
Huh.
Might be that.
Yeah.
So Ira, we're going to be, me and Eric are flying into Portland the night before. Then we're going in a convoy vehicle, like 15-person van, up to Bellingham, Washington, Friday. Friday night, they have a pre-party. Saturday is the conference. Sunday, we're going to basically wake up, shake hands with everyone, and head back down to Portland to fly out on Monday.
Yep. And, I've been Google Earthing that. Wow, what a beautiful town it looks like.
Oh, yeah, very. I think we have one more email, Eric.
We do. Let me hit the right button here. Okay. The email just says, check this out, Steve. And this is from Kevin. And he gives us a link to $20 coin-sized open-source Linux computer.
Yeah, this is from a different Kevin. Can't believe I can't remember his name.
Barry?
Yeah. Kevin Barry. And what he's sending me is a link from ZDNet. It's for the Vocor, which is the thumbnail size one that we talked about. It's a nifty. I almost stretch to find positive things to say about this. It's a nifty computer. It's really cool. But size versus price doesn't equate out to me. It's a little bit expensive for what you get. But if I had the use case for this, I would love to buy one. But I have to find a reason to buy one. I'm now at the point where I just can't just buy random mini computers because they're cool. I literally have to try to figure out something to do with them.
This one gets so much press. I don't know what they're doing right, but it seems like I see it. I'm always reading about it. Now, this is the first time I've ever seen it, not a picture of it. And it looks, just glancing at the drawing of it, I would have thought it was a totally different thing because it's just a flat 2D drawing.
Yeah, the drawing is of the Vocor 1.0, which is just the board itself. That's $20. Then if you want the Vocor plus the dock, that's the Ethernet NIC and the USB adapter too. Then I believe is $45.
Yeah, that's what I had been seeing. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's good and I'm sure it's great, but I'm also sure I need to have a use for it. I really need to find something to do with it. With that said, I'm pretty sure I have to become a little bit more educated on what I can do with it.
So, since we're talking about things you can do with it, I'm still working on getting Alexa up on my Pi, but you had a very successful time, right, with Diet Pi last week?
Oh yeah. I've been running the Diet Pi on my C2. It's in beta. This thing runs uncommonly good, uncommonly smooth, just works really good. Everything in the OS works really good. I will say the one thing I didn't realize was off of the system tools menu when I do the LXDE desktop, there's like 7 links to command line applications. They're dietpi-backup, which is a full backup utility built in, dietpi-bug report to submit bugs or problems. DietPi-Cleaner. This is a built-in tool to basically get rid of unwanted files or applications to bring it closer to like it was the day you installed it kind of thing. I like the idea of that. After that, you have DietPi-Config, which is a good configuration tool for screen resolution. Where's the audio going out? Stuff like that. DietPi-Cron, a built-in N curses tool, and all these are N curses or command line tools with some level of GUI to them. Cron is the tool that lets you do basically like scheduled tasks, where you can set up things to happen every minute, every hour, every day, every other day, first Monday of the month or whatever. After that, you have DietPi-Launcher, which is what happens at boot. Then you have DietPi-Process tool, which is kind of like HTOP to look at all the processes that are being ran on your OS. Then you have DietPi-Software. That's if you want to install bulk loads of software, like a complete Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP server through one interface, just one option. After that, you have DietPi-Sync, which I'm not completely sure, but I believe that's how I can synchronize my installation with basically development releases of DietPi, so I can have bleeding edge operating system after install. Then you have DietPi-Uninstall. That's to get rid of that software that you installed. And then DietPi-Update updates all those tools. So DiePi is growing, I'll say this, unbelievably fast. This is an unbelievably mature looking attempt at an operating system specifically designed for this Pi experience versus everything else I've seen. Everything else I've seen, I'm going to be a little bit harsh in saying, is near incompetent when compared to this. When I run Debian, it does like 1/10 of what I just said out of those tools. When I run Ubuntu Mate, it does nothing that this tool does. It gives me a pretty interface. It gives me a pretty desktop. It gives me tools that I'm accustomed to using, but it doesn't give me those kinds of apps, which nothing does. So whoever is doing DietPi, who I heard on that podcast, my hat goes off to him. He's doing, to me, a hell of a good job.
Well, it's nice to have choices in this stuff, too.
Yeah.
Now, you're running on your Odroid. Is the Odroid the probably optimum device to be running DietPi on in your... I mean, you haven't ran DietPi on everything, but I see that they do support the OrangePi, which
yep.
I have, and I haven't found a use for. Do you think it would be kind of the same experience on an OrangePi compared to your Odroid at all, though?
Probably be a touch better,
really?
Is the impression I get, yeah. Because everything they're doing here, they've already done for other distributions. They're just getting all the drivers in place. Like, for instance, if I hook up a Wi-Fi card to this, I don't see any easy way to add Wi-Fi support in the interface. You have to go command line back end doing it, where hopefully that will be a little bit better in the future. But I know when I ran it on the OrangePi, I was shocked, very shocked and impressed at how well it ran on a $10 computer. You know,
so you ran DietPi on your OrangePi already?
I ran it on my OrangePi. I also ran it on the Banana Pi Pro. And I think I also tried to run it at least on the Raspberry Pi 2, but I just got it running and turned it off there.
Nice. Yeah, okay, that's cool. I'll probably have to give it a try on the OrangePi then. Because I haven't thought of something for that one yet. Cool. Dor, you are the man with the links today. I looked at a couple of these.
Okay. Well, the first one I think I have to mention, it's line 124 in our docs. Just because I thought this was a near, I don't want to say ingenious, I don't want to go too far in what this is. But this to me is a near ingenious hack. Using the Raspberry Pi and I believe the webcam module, it wouldn't shock me if you can use a normal webcam, but just using that and built-in software you can get, you can turn your Pi into a speed camera. I just thought this was fantastic. I love the idea of putting this on your Pi, pointing it out your window, and seeing who's speeding down your road. And it's literally just, there isn't a crazy install. It's just one Python file, which I gotta say, I'm sorry. The more I see done in Python, the more I really like it.
This is cool. I like how, say you've got a friend at the police station, you can just take these little screenshots of the car with the speed right above it. So if you get the same, you know, bad neighbor down the street who does, you know, 38 miles an hour and 25 in front of your house every day, you just, you know, they got the date, time, and speed right above the picture of the vehicle that's doing it. That's yep. Fun.
Yeah. I mean, now all you need to make it run is Raspbian, OpenCV, and Python, and then you install this script. And I believe it will let you use the webcam. But what I am seeing, he is using the Pi camera module.
The one reviewer said he didn't have it pick up anybody over 36 miles an hour, but you know, it's still cool.
Well, it's a question of frame rate, and that's going to be the one thing. Depending on how much zoomed in the camera is and what your frame rate is, it's going to directly affect what is the maximum speed you can pick up on. And it says OpenCV, is a tool for C++, C, Python, and Java on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So OpenCV is like a tool, library set, I believe, maybe used by that script. This is really cool. This guy deserves something. I don't know what, but he deserves something. This is cool.
So I'm guessing for some time when you first set it up, you know, depending on how far away from your street you are, you would have to calibrate it. You'll have to drive your own car at 25 miles an hour numerous times probably to get it dialed in, so that it is picking you up correctly at 25. And then once you get that set, though, and you know 25 is 25, From there, you should be good to go, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure any of the speed measurements will be court qualifiable, because I know with radar guns and even laser guns, they have to be calibrated every 2 years. So, you know, but it's good to know.
I remember a few years back, I bought my son a radar gun. It was a Hot Wheels one, and you could set it. It had a knob on the back. You could set it for real cars or Hot Wheel cars. So then the Hot Wheel cars, it would scale it. You know, so if this was a full size car, it would really be going this fast. You know, when you're, it was kind of fun.
That's cool. I'm sorry. If I was a kid, I would have been abusing that out and pointing that thing at everybody. Aunt Martha, why are you going 35 down our street? Okay. The next link here I'm going to talk about, Eric,
yep.
I'm just going to talk about it a little bit, was 124, a link on in Structables.com called Make a Dumb Device Smart with, I believe that's pronounced Polite.
I think it's Pylite.
Pylite. Oh, yeah, Pylite and HomeKit. Okay, Pylite is something that I know our friend Richard, garage door guy, Richard, uses in support of with PyAware, I believe. PyAware is the airplane tracking software that he can, you know, he'll know all the planes that are above his house kind of thing.
Nice.
Pylite and HomeKit. HomeKit, let me go backwards. HomeKit is trying to be that one operating system application hub interface for all of your Internet of Things devices. So that's where you can go to say, when this trigger gets triggered, this button gets pushed, or this doorbell gets ringed, or this light gets turned on, I need you to do this other thing. So this would be like the main controller, and it will be HomeKit. Pylite, I'm going to have to assume, I'm going to just guess and say, Pylite lets you control lights.
Yeah, I think so.
But I don't know.
Okay, so HomePie, when I say HomeKit, HomeKit, now that's running on a different computer or, see, I tried to read this earlier and I could not understand where it was, what it was trying to tell me. I don't know. But I didn't go through all the steps, I guess, to.
Okay, Pylite, here you go. Pylite is a free Domatica solution. What? That runs small form factor computers with supply for more than 60 different devices, an integrated web UI. It has its own Android app and advanced venting library. I thought that's what HomeKit was for.
Yes, I wasn't catching this one at all, but
okay, I'm obviously saying the one word wrong. Domotica, Domotica. Domotica.
Yeah, sounds right.
Domotica? Domotica. It says Pylite is open source, full-fledged, free Domotica. Solution that runs on Raspberry Pi, Hummingbirds, and Banana Pis, but also on BSD Linux versions. Currently supported devices, the main features are open source, open hardware, free, fully modular, highly quality code, integrated web server and web GUI, lightweight. So this, I'm going to guess, is the interface part of it. Because they keep touting a fully, fully GUI, web GUI kind of thing. Mm. I'm gonna have to see. I would love to install this and play with it, but I have nothing in my house I want to automate. It's like I told
not even one light somewhere.
No, I told Captain Zero this. I don't have a problem with walking across the room and flicking a switch. Number one, I really don't. I really have no problem with that whatsoever. I'm not put out. I'm not. It isn't too far to go. Also, I already have an Internet of Things solution. It's called my kids. Danny, turn the light on. Billy, turn that TV off. I mean, I already got it. So I don't really have a use for any home automation.
So here's my use. Like in this studio that I'm in right now, there was a light socket in the ceiling of this room, and it was a pull string. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know, this is a few years back. I just bought the RF controlled light things. You know, it's like you plug it in, you screw it into your light screw thing, and then you screw the bulb into it, and then there's a battery operated switch on the wall. So then you've got a wireless light switch. Right. I've got two of these in down here, one for this room and one for the room next to it. Because I don't know, back in the 50s when this house was built, pull strings were the fun thing, I guess, or something, and they were easy, and they didn't believe in running extra wires for switches or something, I guess. And So this way I can turn the lights on right when I open the door and I don't have to be, you know, tripping over stuff trying to get to the string.
Right. Okay, I'll say this about it. Okay, HomeKit, now when I say it, I puke in my mouth a little bit. It looks like an Apple thing, to which makes me say I really don't care what it is. I really don't care what it does. I really don't care how it does it, because I'm never going to be able to use it. I'm never going to be able to use it right, and I'm never going to be able to use it how I like to, because it's an Apple thing. I already know that. But when I look at PyLight and I go to Google Image Results, I see unbelievably friendly web UI on either mobile or on full desktops, with very easy switches and very easy event-based activities where I can say, when this webcam sees activity,
oops,
you know, either send an email or turn on a light or something else kind of thing. So PyLight looks really cool.
So maybe wow, I just learned something about myself. I just don't understand things with Apple stuff in it automatically.
Well, it's just garbage automatically. And if you don't like that, you can send emails to SMD Computers.
I had,
or Steve at SMD
Computers. SMDcomputers.com. I had no idea until step 14 that this integrates with Siri, and I hadn't been anywhere close to step 14 on this. And it was my mind. Wow, man, that's clairvoyance in some way, Dor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just more proof that the Apple stuff will slowly crumble and fail. It's just a question of how long. It might take the FBI to do something to them. You know,
nah,
it's inevitable.
FBI doesn't need them now.
I know.
They got McAfee to get everything they needed.
Oh my lord! Yeah, I'll buy that for a dollar. Now there's another link on there. I want to say right now it is line 126, Eric.
Okay.
This is the kind of thing where this is like a article geared towards me, because when I sit in front of myself, I can see in front of me a banana Pi, the original, a Raspberry Pi, original, a Raspberry Pi 2, and then I'm going to have a Raspberry Pi 3 also sitting here doing basically nothing because my Odroid rocks the house and it works fantastic, and so I'm abusing that one. And my Odroid C1 is upstairs in my home theater box, just kicking butt, taking names, working great. So here's an article on Jacob's Amalamala something.
Jacob.com. Salmella.
Sure, yeah, Salmonella. Right. It is called Raspberry Pi and Routing, Turning a Pi into a Router. Now, I know making a router and then making a what's called a WPS, a range extending device, is only one step away. So I know if I'm able to turn it into a wireless router, it's really close to making that extra step. I also will say, I always had a dream, Eric, of going to a conference, having a battery device, having a Pi device connected to it, having a storage connected to that, walking around offering a access point for people to connect to, but then have what's called a captive portal, to where when they connect to my Pi device at a conference, no matter what they do, they'll be redirected to a web page that will basically offer them the ability to watch stored Podnuts content right there at the conference. I never figured out the captive portal part of it.
Yeah. I mean, well, if you can, couldn't you just direct your browser to only point to those things on your hard drive, and they actually wouldn't be hitting the internet. They'd just be logging into your hard drive via a web interface to only see Podnuts stuff.
Yeah, the problem I was having was HostPad host APD. Okay, that's how you get the wireless access point to suck in the signal and divert it. But every time I tried to do a captive portal, it only wanted to do it on stuff coming in through the Ethernet port. So I was doing something wrong, and I could never figure it out. So I know I was really close to doing it. But yeah, looking at this steps for it, this is very similar to what I did when I was trying to get that portable Pi server up and running. So this is not rocket science. This is not crazy hard. The only problem I ever had with doing this on any Pi with any OS was trying to set a static IP in some Pi operating system used to cause the NIC to not work.
Gotcha.
Which was just a little bit of a headache, I will say that. But that was 2 years ago. I guarantee you they've cleaned it up at least a little bit. So that shouldn't be an issue. Raspbian is now much more mature than it was then.
Oh, this is, I just got a new Wi-Fi stick in the mail that's got a big antenna. It's similar, kind of similar to the ones in the picture here, but I don't have It doesn't have that much hardware to it. It's a much smaller device. It's a newer one that just came out, and I'm testing it, but I haven't tried it out on anything yet.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm going to add this link to our notes, Eric. It's at elenix.org, and what it is it's a quote-unquote official listing of the most supported wireless adapters for Raspberry Pi. And here's the goal. If it is well supported on the Raspberry Pi, then the odds are it's going to also be very supported on every other ARM architecture device, more than likely. It's not absolute, but it definitely, to me, increases the odds in my experience.
Yeah, I'd be extremely shocked if the one that I just picked up is going to be in here. But, you know, it may have internal parts that are very similar to other ones, you know. They're probably not.
Yeah, you just hit the nail on the head. The 99% of the time, the make and the model is almost irrelevant. It's what is the chipset that's being used. Because a lot of them are reused. That's the bottom line. A whole lot of them are being. But if you look at this list, what you'll see is there is a hell of a lot. I mean, I'm not even through the Bs yet, and there has to be at least 50 of them. Buffalo, 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 Broadcom, Blitz, Belkin, 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 Asus, 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 Airlink, 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 you know, a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, I was kind of cheesing because this one has N, you know, wireless N built into it too.
That's good.
A little happy about that to try it out. But now,
right. Well, yeah.
I don't know if I told you. I moved my shed, right? Did I tell you that? I did that last weekend.
Don't remember.
I took my shed that was in my backyard and I moved it just 100 feet into the new yard away from my house, so it's farther away. But that's where I had my Wi-Fi access point out there because I had power to my shed.
Gotcha.
And now I don't have any power and I don't have any Wi-Fi out there. So I'm going to run conduit underground, you know, and then throw some electrical lines through there, run a couple 110 circuits out to both the new garage and the shed. Is, in your experience, can I run Cat5 in there, in that same piece of conduit with the electrical? Do you think it would be safe, or do you think there'd be a lot of interference with two electrical wires in the
I guarantee you, cheap Cat5 cable or Cat6 cable, you will definitely have interference. But the whole reason you have the twisted pair is to minimize the interference. So how long of a distance is it?
It's going to be at least 100 feet. No, wait.
Okay, as long as it ain't 250.
6 foot, 8 foot. Yeah, at least 100.
Okay. Yeah, that should really be fine. I'll say that. Because Ethernet, I don't think, starts falling apart until you get like 250 feet.
Okay.
I'll say if you get cheap cable, there's going to be a fair chance it's not going to work. But if you get good quality cable, my logic is it will probably be shielded enough.
Yeah. So if somebody that's listening to the show and they have some experience about running conduit with power cables underground with Cat5, give me a shout out and some ideas because I don't want to do it wrong because I only want to do it once. You know what I mean? I don't want to be messing with it too much. I mean, I really need to get power and I need to get internet out there. But when I get out there, then I'm going to have some sort of a router or Wi-Fi access point or something out there. Something like this would be pretty good. There's no, so I've got a, you know, a regular wireless home router, you know, this Netgear thing in here, right? I can just run off of one of those going out, you know, one of the hardwired outs to a new router out there somewhere. And that's all good.
Yeah, the gimmick is the router out there, you would put it in bridged mode.
Oh, okay.
And then it should work fine. Because you don't want that router out there doing DNS and everything else. You just want that to just stupidly pass all traffic back to that first router.
Okay.
And there is a link that I found in that elenix.org article. Eddie Max, EDIMAX 7811UN. I bought a couple of these little Wi-Fi dongles. These things were like $9, and these do, I believe, N as well. And the first device I stuck in was my Odroid. I got horrible performance. I mean, like 1 meg speeds. Unbelievably bad connections. So I come here, and I click on the link, and I can see that it says for like optimal best speed, you should install it via a script that gives me a link to savagehomeautomation.com, where a guy tells you the step-by-step-by-step-by-steps how to quote-unquote properly install this USB Wi-Fi dongle. So I'm going to be trying to do that.
Oh, that's awesome that somebody had figured it out and put it up here for everybody else. That's the one you have, is a 7811 UN150?
Yeah, and it was literally like $8 on sale on Amazon, so I got like two or three of them. I said, hell, can't hurt.
Yeah.
Because the real goal is I want to take my Odroid C2 to work, literally just carry it back and forth to work. But when I'm at work, I can only connect via wireless to my phone because my phone is my tethering device. At home, I can easily connect it through the hardwired NIC.
And what are you going to do with it at work?
Use it as, I try not to use my Windows computer ever. Here's the real logic behind that. Everything I do on my Windows desktop at work is just another opportunity for me to be the guy who accidentally gets a virus that takes down the entire domain. Okay, because it can happen to anybody at any point in time.
Sure.
So I try to do all of my email correspondence and all of my research on the internet on my device, partially because I know it's just safer. I know the security on it. I'm configuring it myself. It's not a Windows computer, so the likelihood of me getting anything infection is slim to none. But it's also, I don't have to worry about clicking a link and having a URL come up on my user log to where somebody can say, well, what is Steve McLaughlin doing going to this domain during working hours? I mean, I don't want to be that guy.
So have you seen that happen at work?
Oh, yeah.
What happens to that guy when
I've been there 20 years, and the last time I know it happened was to about an 85-year-old German guy with a pierced ear, earring kind of in his ear, who talked in such a fashion sailors would blush. This guy. And when he got pulled into an office, first they were really mad that on his HR documentation he was listed as African American. to which he stated, "You will never get me to change that. You cannot make me deny my heritage," which of course he wasn't African American. He said they made a mistake and they put it down. But
that's a good one.
It is. But on his computer, he hit a link and he basically caused what we used to call back in the day a porn storm. You would click a link and then his browser would just go crazy, launching pop-ups. Mm-hmm. And literally, they said he went to something like 200 porn sites in one day.
Yeah.
And he, not really knowing a lot about computers, but he even knew enough to say, okay, why don't you tell me the starting time and ending time where I did all this porn browsing? So that they called him back and they said, well, it looks like it happened between 12 and 1201. He said, you're telling me I went to 200 porn sites in less than 2 minutes and you're going to hold me accountable for that? He said, obviously my computer was infected and that's why it happened. So he basically set the computer people straight when he got caught doing it. But I do know two other people that got fired for doing
work-related stuff.
Stuff that involved stuff that was just unsavory, as they put it. So I have seen people basically who are on probation get let go because of it.
Unbootable.
Exactly. Right. So I'm going to definitely keep that e-link. And this is this e-link.org link in the notes. I encourage everyone, click it, bookmark it for yourself for later. It's because if you have a Pi device, and hypothetically, let's say the Raspberry Pi, you want something with better wireless networking or faster wireless networking, this will be a good link to keep in your stash to go look at to see what devices are supported and what's the ones that offer N or whatever the next standard is kind of thing. It's really good to have.
That's elinux.org/RPI_USB_Wi-Fi/Y-Fi_adapters. Nice.
Yeah, and I'm going to also earmark that one that I forgot to put the turn the Raspberry Pi into a router.
And
make sure that one's in the notes.
I am definitely saving this to my browser bookmarks, those for sure.
Okay, one more link I'm going to talk about, and it's to a YouTube video. It's 129 in our notes, Eric. I don't know if you saw this at all, but RetroPie. I have literally been talking about RetroPie for every bit of 2 years on my shows, okay? Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, no matter what I said about RetroPie before, forget about it, okay?
Oh.
Just forget about it. Because RetroPie is nonstop, constantly innovating, evolving, changing their interface up, changing their backend up, getting better and better and better and better and better. So if you haven't tried RetroPie in a couple months, and to be quite honest, it did something that you liked, but it did something that you hated as well, I cannot encourage you enough to give RetroPie again another try, especially now if you want to try it for your Raspberry Pi 3. It's a more powerful device. You should have a more satisfying gaming experience. There's a link from Tech Tipsta, which I really find annoying, like a hipster kind of name, but he is really smart, and this is a really good video, unbelievably documented video with in the very beginning he has like a bookmarking system where right in the beginning of the video on a desktop you can click and go right to part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8, and in his like a hardware listing he even gives you like complete listings of all the hardware that he's using: the Raspberry Pi, the USB drive to transfer the ROMs, a USB keyboard, a micro SD card, a power, an HDMI cable, Ethernet cable, Bluetooth dongle, Wi-Fi dongle, Xbox controller, you know, everything completely listed. This guy is definitely obsessive compulsive when it comes to documentation, and that's why I'm bringing this video.
I like Tech Tipsta as a name, honestly, and this is really cool.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the better. There's a whole lot of videos out there, and most of them completely shuck by kids with Lisp, with their parents screaming in the background, where you can't understand what he's talking about, and the audio, it is just horrible videos.
Yeah.
This one actually sounded good, looks good. So if you are at all interested in RetroPie, how to get it installed from scratch, how to get it running from start to finish, all of the parts that you would need, and then how to get games on the device, this is a really good video, and it's a nearly 20-minute video, so he does not cut any corners.
I haven't really looked at RetroPie. I'm really impressed with that interface at the beginning of the video. Is that your experience for an interface?
Yeah, around maybe a couple months ago, they went through a major overhaul with the interface. Now, in the video, if you jump to about 1610, you'll get a good look at the interface. Once you get the controller configured, that's the first hurdle, which now it's much more tightly integrated with First Boot. Once you get that controller configured, browsing the interface, going through the interface is unbelievably easy.
I don't think I've ever heard of ScumVM. I saw that flash through there.
Sure you have. You just don't know it. ScumVM was a LucasArts virtual machine back in the day for point-and-click adventure games. All their games basically use ScumVM. You didn't know it when you went and bought the games for the old DOS computers and stuff, but ScumVM is the tool you can use. Load up ScumVM and load a lot of those old games.
So this setup is the Raspberry Pi 3 that he's showing on here. So that's good.
Yeah, and with the Raspberry Pi 2, I was nearly able to run Nintendo 64.
I'm watching him play some game like at 18 minutes in, 18 and a half minutes in. It's like a 3D.
Oh, the Super Nintendo. That's Mario 64.
Huh.
Mario 64. Yeah. I knew it was Mario. I had to stop and think about it. And this is on the Nintendo 64. And this, to me, is one of the true tests. If you can run this kind of quote-unquote 3D old school gaming on it, you can run a lot.
Yeah, good. Yeah, thanks for that, Dor. That's
because if you watch the video, keep watching the video, at 18:41, Mario jumps out of the tube. And
yeah.
He might not look exactly like you remember him, but it's close enough because, you know, it's blocky 3D graphics.
Yeah. Well, so Western Digital, I ordered the Pi drive from them, right? It's the 3.1 or
314.
Pi. The 314 gig hard drive I got for $31.42. And I finally shipped. I haven't seen it yet, but they did confirm that it shipped. So that I could just load that up with emulated ROMs and
stuff. Dude, with that, you can, I don't want to say fit every game ever, but you can fit a hell of a lot.
Yeah, that'd be a lot.
And I will say, I know it's an easy to find, so I'm going to try to find it right now while I talk, which is just archive.org. Arcade games, maybe classic arcade games. Let me see. I know there was a one. There was a place on Internet Archive. Oh yeah, here it is. I got it. The Internet Arcade is what it is. I'll put a link in here in the notes, and Eric, I'll put it right here in our.
I must have been there before. It's purple in my Google search.
Okay, there you go. This is one of the places where you can go and very easily download whole lot of games.
Oh, and, yes, Outrun.
Right, and I'll say this. This is probably the safest place you can, too, because on a lot of websites on Windows computers,
yeah,
you have a definite possibility of getting infected.
Yeah, this is one of the honeypots for infections.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm trying to think of a good...
A defender. I mean, Pitfall 2.
Yeah, crazy.
Qbert. Oh, see, now Qbert might make it all worth it right there. Tapper. You, man, these are... are these all Atari? These are Atari games, weren't they? The ones I'm reading off, they had to.
They have a definitely blend.
Yeah. I'm seeing
some arcade games like Outrun. Yeah. Altered Beast was definitely not Atari. I mean, maybe Jaguar, but no, this one published Sega 1998. Yeah, this is mostly arcade machines, I believe. But there is a ROM collection. That's the word I'm going to look for. ROM collection with Internet Archive. Now, unfortunately...
So these here, I could download, hit that little green disk on here, and that is what I'm looking for to work in the into the Raspberry Pi thing that we just got done watching the video of?
Yeah, now, all the ones I'm seeing right here on Internet Archive are arcade games. They're not Super Nintendo, Nintendo, Atari, Jaguar, stuff like that. But... I will say on the MAME ROMs, yeah, it's 42.8 gigs on the Internet Archive, and this is literally going to be nearly every single arcade game you can ever imagine you've seen. Because I actually did download this one time, and I tried to actually go through it and look at, and every arcade machine I could think of, I was able to find a ROM for it, or by another name. Like, what I knew of is Jungle Hunt. I want to say it was like Jungle Adventure or something to that effect. Yeah, I'll make sure these two links are on the note. But I will say, downloading ROMs for anything, I highly encourage people, do not do it on a Windows computer unless you have to, because there is a chance you'll get infected. If you don't have a Linux computer handy, download a live ISO, like Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, something else, load it on a USB key or in a VM, and download the ROM from there, just to be completely safe. I have to suggest that.
Okay, so I clicked on Load Runner 3, the Golden Labyrinth. It says stream only. Do I? It's got media type software. Maybe I gotta click that. I'm just trying to see where I actually download the game at.
Well, the Internet Archive, I know, does have a player, quote-unquote, in the browser somehow. I've never seen it in use. But yeah.
I just have to do some digging.
Yeah, I mean, right here, I'm just looking at it right now. I have a click to begin button. Downloading emulator, downloading game file, downloading CGE file, downloading metadata, insert coin, player one, bam, game starting. That's right there in my browser.
Huh, I didn't get that.
I don't know.
Oh, click to begin. Oh, okay, yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, can you just load up a browser on a Raspberry Pi with this? You think this emulator would work on a Raspberry Pi browser? And we could just play it.
As long as it's not Flash, and to be honest, I can't tell what it is, but it doesn't look like it's Flash. View page source. I gotta love Internet Archive. It's just good stuff. They have a little ASCII art at the very top of the page showing archive.org. I'm going to guess this is just JavaScript. So yes, it probably would run. Probably not as good as the emulator in the game, in the actual ROM itself, but it should run.
That's neat.
Very cool. Right, yeah, this is very cool.
I'm going to have to not play games during... Yeah, I did. Oh, okay. So I was trying to hit player one, but I didn't insert the coin first.
You know, I found out my right control was my gas.
Oh, what game are you playing?
Outrun, of course.
Oh, yeah, I'm stuck on Load Runner. This is like a Commodore 64 game, I think.
Yeah, Outrun. This is, I'm going to say this is arcade quality. Yeah, I got to close this window.
Dude. Yeah, me too. We're just going to say you're playing games. Sorry, guys. Right. Sorry.
Yeah,
This makes a lot better video than radio or than what we're trying to do. We're just both playing games. Anyway, check it out. Go to archive.org and just type in Internet Arcade, and you can start playing games during your podcast.
Exactly. Now, the one thing I'm not finding, Eric, let me see something. Was it this one? No, I'm looking at this link.
I was not finding where I can download it.
Unfortunately, it's always semi-hidden on archive.org. It's typically lower on the page.
Okay.
Which, of course, is always just down further. There was a link. I'm guessing I didn't save it out to my links, where it was a whole bunch of interfaces for the Pi was a hat. But I don't see it here, because that was one I thought was real cool. But I got to highlight that RetroPie thing, make sure I get that moves too. So, give me a second. Okay. Yeah. This I never saw either. Okay, Micronauts. I don't know if you ever heard of Micronauts, Eric.
Sounds like a toy.
No, Micronauts I've been following off and on for well over a year. Micronauts has done some of the best head-to-head comparisons of small board computers or single board computers that I've seen. A lot of Banana Pi, Banana Pro, Odroid, Raspberry Pi. And there's a link here, 133, to a magazine I never heard of on his webpage that he's at least talking about called Servo. This is a magazine for the people who really want to do much, much, much more than just controlling the lights or, you know, doing that kind of thing. This is a guy, this is a digital magazine, I believe, where really you want to start to get in and make yourself small robot-like devices.
Yeah, it looks like the magazine's at servomagazine.com and says Servo for the robot innovator.
Yeah, this is very high-end stuff. Even if you just get this digital mag once a month to just, peruse and see what kind of things you can make for inspiration, dare I say, or even maybe for your kid or, you know, you want to inspire them, this might be the place. Captain Zero wanted to hear about the more higher end stuff to do. I think this is it. I think if he gets his toes into Servo Mag, we might not hear from him again for a couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Micronauts is going to be in the notes. Check him out too, people. Honestly, I don't say this easily, but he has some really good content. He's a really smart guy.
Unfortunately, I was trying to watch this video on a Parker bot, but the sound will not go off at all. But it looks like somebody takes like a Halloween spider and adds some LED lights to it, and they just drive it around town. It's kind of scary looking.
Nice. Yeah, I think this is it, Eric. Yeah. Okay, this is it. I found that link I was looking for.
Okay.
It is 133, and it's Pi 2 Media HT1. Surround Sound Home Theater PC, for some reason, was the title of it, which is why I was confused. It is to pi2design.com. There's a hat here on the design. If you take a look at the thumbnail images and you click the rightmost one, you'll see, Eric, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 socket interfaces for Internet of Things devices. Now, granted, it's Pi 2 design, really focusing on Raspberry Pi 2. There's no doubt everything is compatible with the Raspberry Pi 3, period. So if you want an Internet of Things type shield or hat for your Pi, this to me looks really nice, really flexible, whole lots of ports for UART, L2C, all those things that if you know about Internet of Things devices for your own good, you already know about these ports. There's a whole bunch of them. This is really, to me, looking like a really nice board.
Which board are you talking about? The 502V?
It is the Pi 2 Embedded, because they do have a couple ones. If you scroll down, you'll see the Pi 2 Media and the Pi 2 Embedded.
Oh, I gotcha. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What are those are very familiar looking connectors on top.
I honestly can't remember the name of it. I'm looking right here at my Odroid, and right there is one of those connectors as well.
Like a really small Molex or something, kind of like a micro Molex or something, maybe?
I think that is the right term for it, because I was looking for the term the other day when I saw this, and I could not find what that term is.
It's like it is a 4-pin white plastic connector for power, usually.
Yeah, it says PMOD IO standard connectors.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing that's what they're talking about. Yeah, sure. It just looks to me really cool. These guys have some very customized hardware specifically for Internet of Things type of projects. So if you want to take your IoT to the next level, I'll say this might be really what you're looking for.
I see that thing, and I think of like running a light show off of it or something. You know, we've got different strings of lights plugged into each one of those, and you can control them through it or something. Or I guess it could be lamps, too.
Yeah, they keep saying Groove IO connectors. I believe that's it. It's either Groove or PMOD. Yeah, dare I say, above my pay grade, but really cool looking. This is the kind of board I would like to see extremely well-documented projects to where someone like me could even hop on board and hopefully not, you know, burn down our house and get something really cool up and running.
Yeah, it's above my pay grade, too. They are all labeled nicely, though, on the board itself. What's what?
Okay, now the last thing I'm going to bring right here, which I just have to bring because I'm a nerd. The very last link, I believe, in our notes, Eric, 136.
Oh, yeah.
American Hero hacks Game Boy to run almost any retro game. Okay, this is, to me, literally sheer genius. Mm-hmm. What it is, okay, part of the failings of emulators are you're doing it on your computer screen, you're doing it with a controller that the game wasn't intended to be played on, the refresh rate isn't the same, all this kind of thing. This guy basically is using a Nintendo Game Boy and hacking the cartridge in order to take a micro SD card, okay? Then he's basically in, he has like a modded Game Boy with four buttons instead of just the two, a full color screen on it. So it's the same physical shape and size as a Game Boy because it looks like the literal shell of old school Game Boy. Customized a little bit of the internals, aka it looks like all of them. But you have a normal quote unquote game cart on it where you can insert a micro SD card, play any game. The normal ports on the side where it used to be like the brightness control, it looks like, is the HDMI output. So you can actually connect this to a big screen TV if you want.
Well, does he have a does he have a Pi Zero inside of the inside of the cartridge that goes inside of the Game Boy?
Not inside the cartridge, but inside the Game Boy itself, it does look like there's a Pi Zero, yes. A Pi Zero and a battery pack.
Okay.
Where in the game, it literally looks like the normal game connector, but he just basically soldered onto the board wires coming out to a micro SD card. So,
wow.
Yeah. Talk about time on his hands and passion in his heart. I will say, this guy deserves something.
There's some smart people out there, Dor.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know if this guy realizes it. This is the kind of thing, if he could, and this was old, if you know Podnuts, Eric, you know Steve Cherubino, years ago, wanted to look at custom making portable gaming systems and selling them. It was just too hard to like mass produce is what he said. But this is the kind of thing where if this guy could even come close to producing, I could see people happily paying $100 for this piece of hardware.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And if you jump to the video around 2 minutes, 30 seconds in, you'll see it's running Emulation Station, which is RetroPie, basically. Same kind of thing. So he's basically running what we talked about earlier, RetroPie, on this portable Game Boy-sized.
Yeah, and just to get this emulator going inside of an old Nintendo Game Boy like that. That's one thing. To totally hack a cartridge to then accept a micro SD card and work in there like a cartridge, that's above and beyond. That's, man. See, we got to get this guy on our show sometime, Dor.
I don't know if he'll have time or be able to communicate with us because this guy's really smart. Yeah. Check out more photos and mods here or go on eBay and start sobbing hysterically because the childhood games you sold your neighbors are now worth thousands of dollars. Just looking at some of the notes here. Wow. Yeah, this guy's really smart. And I wish I could find a parts list kind of thing, because this is the kind of thing where if I found a parts list, I actually might be tempted to at least start doing this. But I need extreme details.
You need to learn to solder.
Oh, well, I don't think that'd be really hard. I think it's just a question of money. When I was looking at soldering, it's going to cost me a hell of a lot more than I thought.
Solder's cheap.
You know, well over $150 to get the helping hands, the magnifying glass, a good soldering gun, a good wick, a solder sucker, the whole nine. Not cheap.
No, but yeah, $150. That's a good investment. That'll last the rest of your life. You get a good one. I wish I still had mine.
As long as I do it. Yeah, it's a good investment as long as I keep doing it, kind of thing. Yeah, this is really cool. This guy deserves something. This is fantastic.
You can get a helping hands with a magnifying glass at like Radio Shack for not too much.
What Radio Shack?
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
No, there are a couple secret, out there. I heard they are still. There's still a couple stores open. I know about them. Okay, Eric, was there any more of those links you wanted to bring up?
No, I didn't really get into the GLaDA one. I think that's pretty good for this week. Let's get anything.
Gotcha.
I hope I get to learn a little bit more about the Arduino stuff while I'm out there at Linux Fest. I think I did put myself in some kind of a session about that. And I can't wait to see if somebody brings a couple little projects that they've made there to show off, and I can check that out. I can't wait to talk to people about that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. The hallway track for that works, because if there is Arduino stuff, literally all you have to do when you're in one of those tracks, look around, remember faces, mm-hmm. and then as soon as the talk ends, start talking to at least one of those people there, and I guarantee you, worlds, quote-unquote, will open up.
I think my last name is actually the plural of Arduino. If you've like had like five of them in one place.
Well, then you can tell people, look, my brother founded the company. Why don't you tell me some of the things that you're doing with it?
Yeah, I can go back and tell him.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Mario.
Very cool. Very good stuff, Eric.
Yeah, well, I don't know. This has been a little shorter than normal show, but, you know, we were a little shorter than normal on hosts tonight. So we'll end it off now, and we will... wait for some more emails. We got a little light on the emails, so if you guys want to send us some emails now without a prize attached to it, do that. Or voicemails, too. But we do have at least one thing to give away, and we'll probably talk about that next week. And we may, I don't know, what are we going to do? Are we going to, we'll have one more show before you head out, right?
Yes.
We'll do a show that week, too, of Linux Fest Northwest, too, right? Of the show. We should, yeah.
Yeah, the voicemail number is 7076-PODNUT. If you go to the website, hit contact, Mini PC Show, that's the way to be sure that email is in the most obvious thing, because it has a static subject line, so it's very clear this is a contact email. I believe I had an email issue over the last week or two, so what I'm going to start to do is I'm going to take every email account I have on podnut.com and have an email there sent every day, just as a heartbeat, mm-hmm. so I can be sure that email is all up and running and everything working good. If you tried to send an email and you got a delivery notice back saying it's in standby, it's in hold, I apologize. I'm trying to get everything back up and running like it should be.
And if you want to help support the show along with your emails and voicemails, if you're buying a breadboard or a USB Wi-Fi dongle, and you're probably going to Amazon for that, just make sure you go to podnuts.com/Amazon, and Dora will get a little kickback for everything, and it won't change your price any, it won't change your shipping any, you won't even know that anything happened, but they will help. That will then help support the Podnuts Network. And with that being said, I think we will see you next week.